Hello, everybody. Welcome to the sixth episode of Collegeville Conversation. I'm your host, Jason Phelan. Now, today, we have a very special guest today. He's very experienced in the sports broadcasting field, and I'm very excited to have him on. Very good friend, Ray Dunn. Ray, how are you?
I'm doing good, Jason. How are you?
Very, very good. How about them Phils?
How about them Phils? At the time of the recording, at 500 with a doubleheader coming up, I'm feeling good about getting over 500 today. I really am.
How are you feeling about Spencer Howard so far?
I'm thrilled. I am so thrilled. Spencer Howard being on the rotation is great in the fact that I'm excited about his potential, but even more so means Vinny V is getting kicked to the bullpen, and that is cause for celebration. If you're of the legal age, pop some champagne tonight. Celebrate Philadelphia. This is the closest thing baseball is getting to a championship for a little bit.
Ring it, baby.
I have to say, I want to get out in front of this. So there's a big, big discussion. And if you talk to Addison or anyone that I'm close with from Temple, big discussion about my hometown because my address is Collegeville, but I'm technically in the Oaks area. Like technically I'm considered Oaks. So being on a Collegeville Conversation, it's going to bring a lot of discussion about my hometown. I want to say I am from Oaks. I do love Collegeville. It's my address, but I am from Oaks. So I want to get out in front of that right at the beginning for anyone that will question where my hometown is.
All right. Thank you for clearing that up. I also wanted to add in, like, I think there's no better pitcher in baseball than first inning Vince Velasquez.
Yes, which is wild because there's something in baseball you could do about pitching one inning. And it's mind-boggling that time after time the decision will be made, hey, let's just keep rolling him out for extra innings. No. One inning for Velasquez. If he's lucky, we'll give him two. And then it's over. Boom.
Like the wheels just fall off in the second inning, as you saw in that Marlins series.
He's a two-pitch pitcher in reality. They can say he's worked on his repertoire to get up to four pitches in the offseason. Sure, in the intra-squad scrimmages, it looked like he had under control. In-game, two-pitch pitcher, and he throws a lot of pitches per inning. It's a bullpen guy. That's literally, if you would look up, like, checklist of a bullpen pitcher, he knocks off all of them except for the fact he's still a starting pitcher in the league.
I think there's a word for that we could put him as. Maybe it's a setup man.
They need a right hand setup man. Not gonna be Pavetta.
No way.
So it's not gonna be Ramon Rosso or Reggie McClain or Trevor Kelly or all the names that they've just thrown at us this year.
No, it's gonna be AV. All right, let's
get that off my chest. I'm glad you're giving that platform to spread my propaganda about Vince Velasquez.
Oh, absolutely. Love talking Phillies with other big Phillies fans. So let's get down to business. Now, Ray, your podcast is called Done Deal. You've had some very amazing guests from all over the area. Tell us, what's the most rewarding part of your show, do you think?
I think the most rewarding part of doing my show is that it's very uniquely me. Like the podcast, and I've done podcasts with co-hosts, and all the ones I've done it with have been tremendous. I've had a lot of fun with them, and I obviously go on other people's podcasts, and I enjoy that too. But I think Done Deal, in its essence, is whatever I want it to be, and that's fantastic. And I love the creative freedom with it. I love if I want to have someone on to, you know, BS with me for an hour, I can do that. If I want to have a very serious conversation and bring someone on, I can do that too. You know, I went within a week, and I think October it was, I had McKee on, and then the next week I had Kevin Rice on. And the tones of those two conversations, entirely different. One, very serious preview and, like, talking about McKee's journey to get where he is. And the next week, Kevin Rice and I BSing for an hour about the NBA and the upcoming season. And if you listen to those two podcasts back to back, you might think it's not the same podcast, but it is. And that's kind of what I like about it. I can do what I want with it week in and week out. And I'm excited that I'm finally done with work over the summer that I can really gear up and focus in on doing a weekly podcast again, because I love doing Done Deal. I think the podcasting world is somewhere I'd love to be for a while.
I tell you, Ray, I'm a big fan of your show. I have noticed that too. Like, that's how it keeps things fresh. Like, you're still being yourself while at the same time you're keeping it business too. I think that's a great element of the show, and I think that's what every sports podcast needs, actually.
I think that's kind of the way I am personality wise. Like, I can flip the switch to be serious and, you know, business like, and, you know, the prototypical journalist in quotes there, you know, I can flip the switch to that, but I also love having fun. I love letting my personality show. I think anyone who follows me on social media, I toe the line between, you know, this is a serious account to this is me just, you know, having fun. I think that's the way it should be. Sports were inherently meant to be fun. If you're going to be a sports personality, you should have some fun with it.
You should have some personality. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That too. Yeah. You need personality for that.
Who would you say is your most favorite guest you've had on your show?
Wow. You're going to burn some bridges here. Let's see.
If you absolutely had to answer,
I'm going to cop out. I'm going to give some overviews of my favorite episodes I've done.
Okay.
I would say the last episode I did with JP Mormon, it was a conversation about racial injustice. He's fantastic. Mm-hmm. He was so very honest. I think it was one of the more important things I've ever done.
Right.
In terms of my career, I think that was really something to really have him take the platform and do something special with it. I thought that was an incredible episode. I was really happy with the way that one turned out. I think when I had Darian Howard on and we talked about just his baseball career and also him, he was fun because we did like half about his baseball career and like growing up as Ryan Howard's son. And then we did half of his hot takes. And it was one of those things where it was perfectly down the middle, the dichotomy of done deal. Mm-hmm. It was like, okay, here's this interview-like thing where we get stories about, you know, Darian's life and where he's going baseball-wise. And now, on the other hand, we have him telling me Patrick Mahomes is going to be a perennial, you know, like seven-time Super Bowl winner.
Right.
And we get into his takes about sports. And he was well ahead of most of the curve on LSU. So I got to give him credit for that. But I think those two episodes I really enjoyed. I'm trying to think. I enjoyed Mike Jensen's episode I really liked. Anytime Kevin Rice comes on, anytime Sam Cohn comes on, those are fun ones. So it's hard for me to pick one. I was thinking about during March, and I think I might do it next year, about doing one of those brackets of the guests.
Yeah.
And really trying to wear it down. Oh, actually, no. You know what? Favorite episode? This is really long-winded answer. I realize I'm taking a lot of time.
No, you're good. You're good. Take all the time you need.
We did a fantasy football all-time draft. It was me, Jason Cantor, Noah Clemens, Zach Shorn. So it was two of my roommates and then Jason, who I've been friends with forever. And we did drafting all-time. You get a season and a player. And my fantasy team ended up being the best, so that also helped. I did the points. The points measure out. I was objectively the best team. Mm-hmm. That one was so fun because it was literally, you can tell as we're going through, the pre-planning on that was literally research guys, and we're going to figure it out as we go. And we figured as we went. It was a long, long episode, obnoxiously long. There's no way anyone finished it. But it was so funny because we were just so raw and authentic and like the way we were presenting it. I had so much fun with that one. So that would probably be, again, that's three guests. So I suck at this. That's what
no,
that's
no, you're good. You're good. That's a great answer. I loved hearing that. So you also run the Phillies Ring It Challenge. Tell us about the Ring It Challenge. You've been doing this for like three seasons now.
So it started in the middle of 2018.
Mm-hmm.
I was at the first game of Chase Utley's last series at Citizens Bank Park.
Right.
I had been tweeting. It's the all caps, first name, all caps, last name, ring it, all caps. I've been tweeting that since the beginning of the season. I was like, oh, people kind of like the home run tweets. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing right here, but apparently I'm doing something right, and I should do something more with it.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, you know, it'd be pretty cool if I did some sort of like home run contest, kind of built with this, and it kind of came to me. The original working of it was not what it is now.
Right.
I'd make some corrections to it. By the time I got into August 2018, it was kind of rolling the way it is now. And for me, it was one of those things where it was fun. I was having so much fun keeping up with it. And I love the competition because everybody wants those two tickets when they win. Nobody ever wants that dinner with Jason Kanter. I don't get it. But everybody wants the two tickets. And my friend from high school, who graduated 2 years before me, he just graduated college, won it the first year, got the tickets, or I got him tickets to Pirates Phillies out PNC because he went out to Pitt. He had a great time with it. Eric Kramer won the last year. Eric Kramer, I got to give the guy credit, literally blew everyone out of the water. Like, it was Phillies 2011 type race. Ooh, by the end of September. He was up 16 points with like a week left. And it was like, all right, well, I don't know why we're even bothering to ring it anymore. But it's a lot of fun. And I've been shocked this year, just the growth of it entirely. Like, I think last year I had 69 people participate over the entire season. Well, I think I'm already up to 80 something. And, you know, it's game, was it 8, 9, 10? Like, it's wild. It's wild. It's simple. It's so simple. It's really a daily fantasy for people who don't want to do daily fantasy.
Right.
Just pick player, point value. He homers, you get that point value. You try and end up with the most points at the end of the season. I'm glad people love it because I love doing it. It's a lot of fun to see the community that's kind of come around it, and people tweeting me when the Phillies homer, and people replying to each other when they homer. So I'm all for it. I love the competition of it. I love that people are, you know, finding a way to enjoy Phillies games elsewhere. Because you got to admit, the challenge has seen some really bad baseball. The end of last season, bad baseball. The end of 2018, also some bad baseball. The challenge really came out because I love that 2018 team. I really wish that 2018 team was actually good at baseball, because I love that team.
That was that 2018 team. That was when we had Tommy Joseph playing first base, man. Tommy Joseph was not here that long. Reese Hoskins was 2018, because I remember when Reese Hoskins came up, he was putting up some pretty stellar numbers. He hit a home run like most of the time.
Yeah.
So yeah, I could be wrong actually.
I'm thinking Reese came up at the end of 2017, but that could be my memory fading on that one. I'm going to do this. Don't worry. You will have your answer. Yeah, end of 2017 he comes up. 2018 he's the full-time first baseman. So I missed Tommy Joseph by a year. Definitely would have been a 2-3-pointer if he was in the ring and challenge. But yeah, I would love to do something on that. The lost Phillies of the 2010s.
Kind
of
like the process Sixers.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, the ring and challenge, it looks like it brings a lot of people together. Like, I see Sixers Adam always tweeting at you.
Yeah, Adam's the best. And I said this to Kevin. I was like, Adam retweeted it, and Adam participated on the first day. And I texted Kevin. I was like, the Adam bump's coming. Because Adam, incredibly, like, Adam, of course, being him, he's just incredible at what he does. And he's a child prodigy. At, you know, 18 years old, he covers the NBA better than people who've been on the beat for years upon years upon years.
Right.
But he has, in doing that, he's got a solid following. He's got a really strong, I would call it a fan base, honestly. And when he retweeted it, I was like, oh, the Adam bump's coming. Like, I'm going to get the people that love Adam, that see he's doing something, and immediately gravitate to it. Within three, four minutes after he retweeted, eight, nine responses came in. I picked up a couple followers. I was like, this is ridiculous. Like, this kid, I mean, he's great.
He does got a great following, and he is amazing at what he does, You can't deny that at all. He seems like a great kid, too.
Oh, he is. He's the best. A couple times we got to hang out. Now he's going to be at Temple. We got another great owl. That's all I'm concerned about.
Ton of great owls joining Owl Sports Update. But let's get into your journey in sports broadcasting so far. Let's go into the early days. What made you want to get into it?
So I think, honestly, now that I look back and I've had time to kind of reflect on what maybe, I always say Harry Callis, and I think that's the true answer to it. I think he had the coolest job in the world. And like, for when I was younger, like, I was like, oh, like, 2006 is when I first remember baseball. Like, I was just starting to play T-ball, and Howard was just hitting home runs out there. Yeah. And that's why I fell in love with Ryan Howard, because I love home run, if you can't tell. Absolutely. And I think that's kind of where it started. And I think now that I'm looking back on it, I think I love Terry Callis, not just because he was good at what he did, but I think the impact that he had on so many people. Like, there is just some warmth about, like, hearing his voice, about seeing a broadcast with him. And I think now that I'm further along, I see that, like, that impact that you can have on people is really special. I think when I was younger, it was like, oh, he talks sports, and, like, I like when he's on TV. And I think now it's more like, that's transformed to, yeah, that's, I liked him, but I realize now why I liked him, because it was like that comforting warmth of, you know, someone who you felt like was one of you on television. And I think that's kind of why I want to keep at it. I think that's what keeps me moving, is I think I want somewhere down the line to be a part of a TV market, radio market, what have you, and have that kind of impact on people, where they're like, oh, you know, we like watching you because you make us feel a certain way about this sports team, you know, this event. And I think that's what keeps me moving along.
That's a great answer. Harry is definitely one of the best. We all miss him very, very much, of course.
Absolutely.
Definitely one of the best voices in broadcasting ever, in my
opinion. It is crazy to think the impact that he had on a generation of kids going towards sports media, because you ask a lot of people, it's like, oh, Harry Callis is the reason why I did it. And it's amazing, that impact. And to the point of, I only listened to him for 3 years, really. And that's kind of, I just remember, like, the legendariness of who he was, and that kind of started the idea.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Now, into your spring forward years, you've got a lot of fond memories there. Can you recount some of them for us?
Some fond memories. Well, spring forward in general, is just the superior pack school.
Okay.
No, I mean, spring forward was great. I think, if we want to get into the broadcasting side of things, I could do that. If you want just general over, you know, feet of the entire district, I loved pretty much every stop. I was fortunate. I think I'm one of those people that just absolutely loved where he grew up. Had fantastic teachers, friends, everything going along the way. I shout out to Springford. They did a great job with me. But when it gets to career-wise, I mean, there are very few programs, I think, in the area that come close to what Spring Forward is capable of doing in terms of broadcasting and television. I don't say that in the, you know, hoorah, Spring Forward. I think that in the very much the truth. The studio in there is absolutely incredible for a high school. The fact that we have a truck that can do remote broadcasting and put it over a channel or put it live over the internet is incredible. And the commitment to it from just, you know, teachers, Cheryl Merge, the best broadcasting teacher. She's like a second mom to me.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Rothmel, who's there now, Andrew Rothmel, A. Roth, the director now, and then the late Steve Bonds, who did an incredible job putting all that together. You know, I was in such a great position to succeed because I went to a school that had something like that. And the memories I have from that are a lot of more off air, just making fun of one another and joking around. The broadcasts were so much fun because really it was like you were hanging out with your friends and talking sports. Me, Anthony DeBundo, and I did a couple of games together over his senior year, my junior year. And those games were literally just us on the broadcast were like us at Champs eating nachos. Like, mm-hmm. It's just the same. It was the same type of chemistry that we had. By the time I had gotten comfortable working with him and he was comfortable working with me, it was easy. It was so much fun. I remember our last broadcast, it was a baseball game, and we heard Bonds in our ear talking about how there was a game coming up and talking about just a couple things. He didn't think we could hear him. So every time he mentioned something, we would make mention of it on the broadcast, and he would get really confused. We could hear him through the headset. And he would be, after like three or four times, he's like, can they hear me? Are they listening to me? Are they? And he's getting all angry down in the truck. And the two of us are just like trying so hard not to crack up laughing during the broadcast. And it was just little things like that where we just had so much fun doing it. Then my senior year, I mean, we did so much. We did everything. I called, I think, every sport imaginable senior year. And it was fun doing absolutely everything. You get the really cool experiences of calling pack title games, you know, basketball.
Right.
You became a pack champion on a broadcast that I was on. I mean, it's moments like that. I mean, the boys basketball team never won on the pack championship I was on. The girls basketball team did. Want to shout them out for that. 2018 senior year, they win. But maybe PV too, actually. Should point that one out. But yeah, I think for me, the overarching memory of Springport is just the sheer amount of opportunity and how tight-knit everything was there. Like I think I had an incredible support group throughout Springport just because people knew what I wanted to do and they took me seriously in doing that and helped me along.
Right, and that's the kind of environment you need to succeed. Like, if everybody has each other's back, then it'll encourage them. It'll make them feel stronger, and it'll make them, you know, believe that they can achieve the goals better than anybody can.
Yeah, and I think I say it all the time, and Merge gets mad at me for it, that, like, I attribute so much of my success to Springport. So, you're the one putting in the work. Like, you know, like, there's a reason, like, not every 16-year-old is graced with having a fully functional studio and the capability to live broadcast a sporting event. Like, I was steps ahead of the game. Like, it's just, there's no, like, way to around that. There's no, like, hey, I did work hard. I still do work hard. But I was put in a position where I could work hard at a young age and do it with relative ease, given the opportunities.
Right.
So, yeah, if you want to ask me about Springford was the best, you know. My parents, they had no idea where they were moving into. They were moving out to suburbs of Philly. They dropped camp at a really good place. I'm thrilled that Springford was where I ended up.
It was just written in the stars.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it really was. I was meant to be a Ram, I guess. I don't know.
So throughout your whole broadcasting career, who has been the most influential figure for you personally in your whole career?
I'd probably have to go with Steve Bonnets. I think that answer, I think it was one of those things that my junior year, I was, as much as I wanted to do this, I was very unsure of myself. And if you go back and listen to my first broadcast, it was soccer, which I don't know. Anyone who knows me knows that if I'm doing soccer, I am working so very hard to understand it that it's unreal. I did this past fall, I did the A-10 women's soccer quarterfinals, semifinals at LaSalle. And when I tell you I did hours upon hours upon hours upon hours of prep for that, because I don't know what it is about soccer. It never clicks. Yeah. It never clicks for me. I'm not a huge soccer guy. So my first broadcast is soccer, along with DeBundo, and it was just bad. I was bad. Like, there's no two ways about it. There was, you know, the sense of like, okay, he knows what he's doing. He knows how this works, and he's got a bit of a gift for the way he goes about doing it. But like, you could tell I was hesitant. I wasn't confident. And the next day, Bonnets pulled me into the studio while I was in broadcasting class. It's like, he walked me through everything I did, told me what he liked. He told me, listen, I need you to just take a deep breath, relax, talk sports, kind of. And that philosophy is kind of where I've been at ever since. You know, I kind of, every time I get nervous before, whether it be TV, radio broadcast, whether it be a big podcast, you know, that's the philosophy I've stuck with. And I think in that year that I really worked closely with him, he did so much in terms of helping me grow as a person and a professional.
Right.
And losing him in June of that year was so, so incredibly difficult, and in just knowing how great a person he was and how much he had done for so many people, and to have him be gone that quickly. I mean, it still hurts. It still hurts to think about. It still, I don't think there will be a day where it goes by where it doesn't hurt. But I think I've used kind of the idea that I was the last student that he worked with, like, on air. I was really the last on-air personality that he had kind of mentored.
Right.
And I've used that kind of to fuel me, like, his legacy lives on through me. The person he is, or person he was, is lives on through me. He's Steve Bonnet's, you know, the name continues on through. And I think that type of influence that he had on me will continue. And absolutely, I know it continues through Tabondo, and I know it continues through everyone that he's taught. And we all just want to make him really proud and make what he brought, because I mean, he put RCTV in Springfield. There is no RCTV without him. There is no broadcasting program, and all those opportunities I talked about that helped me get ahead, there's not that without him. So the biggest influence, it's got to be him. And I mean, that's what keeps pushing, you know. I'm grateful for everything he did for me, and I'm grateful for the short time that I had to learn with him. And now it's about taking what I've learned and building and building and building and, you know, making his name proud.
I can't imagine what it's like to lose someone that has mentored you to get to help mold you into what you are right now in your career.
Yeah. And you know, it's one of those things that at some point you have to, understand that, like, there's so much more I feel like he and I had in terms of relationships, to grow and him to help me and all those things. And he gave me everything I needed, and I'm forever grateful for that. And I think that that's going to continue to push me along in this career. And no matter where I end up, there's going to be a strong thank you to him.
Very nice, very nice. I don't know if we've touched on this before, but next question is, how has Springford played a role in developing your broadcasting skills early on, and how has Temple played a role in enhancing those skills?
So Springford gave me the reps. They gave me the reps, and they gave me Bonnets, and the two of those combined putting me into a, you know, solid broadcaster as I left. Mm-hmm. I was good. And I also did work writing and did other work production wise outside of Springfield in high school. So by the time I got to college, I kind of had a grasp of how to write, how to deliver on TV, you know, how to report, how to, you know, all the different aspects of what go into a journalist, broadcaster, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got to Temple, it was about just kind of getting involved. And that's where Addison Hunsker, that's where Graham Foley, that's where Dan Wilson was, really come in, and them pushing me to go do stuff and get involved. And later on, Kevin Rice, when he comes back from Rome, because he went abroad for my first semester. That's when those guys really helped get me involved. And that's where Al Sports Update comes in. And everyone that I worked with there has done so much. Matt Fine, who's incredible. That's where WHIP Radio comes in, and everyone that has helped me there. John DiCarlo, I think my skills were enhanced because there was so many opportunities available so quickly. I didn't have time to really just like college,
right?
I guess is the phrase there. I didn't have time to just college where I was just kind of chilling, doing nothing. Like when I got there, I got right to work, and that was the best thing for me because it has really helped me connect. It's helped me get opportunities all across different platforms and meet incredible people. And I think it's helped enhance me because it's about getting reps. It's about getting experience, about screwing up. It's about absolutely making a fool of yourself and coming back and figuring out how to be better. Mm-hmm. And through that, it's made me from good to pretty good, and just continue along that. I mean, I learned how to host a podcast, learned how to edit a podcast, audio. I've learned how a lot of stuff in video editing. It's made me well-rounded. I think that's what it is. I think Springford gave me a solid basis in being a broadcaster, and being slightly well-rounded, and I don't think I took full advantage at Springford of how well-rounded I could be. Temple's forced me to be well-rounded, and I've got professionals and a bunch of incredibly talented students checking me every day to help push me further. And I think that's how they're enhancing me, because you just have so many people looking out for you and looking to better you.
That's what you need. The reps, it's basic. Just over the more you do it, the better you will be.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, it's of the utmost importance. You just keep plugging.
Mm-hmm. Now with Owl Sports Update, tell us about that.
Owl Sports Update is awesome. Just from my totally unbiased opinion, there absolutely. It's so 30-minute live show on TUTV. Talks about Temple sports. That's general gist of it. There's also in the fall the hour-long football show, which I was involved with freshman sophomore year, and I was supposed to anchor this fall. If football happens, you know, we'll see. Mm-hmm. As of right now, still anchoring, fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Still, there's still a show to be had. But Owl Sports and the way it's set up, people can get involved however much they want and when they want. There's the senior staff that are your anchors, your producers, you know, your chief photogs, graphics people, social media, you know, that type of gist. But in terms of staffing the shows, people can volunteer as soon as they want. And I went and saw Owl Sports Update my senior year of high school. Addison had me down for a visit, and immediately I loved it. I was like, oh, this is awesome. Like this looks like the best. And played a big role in whether I committed to Temple. And then freshman year, Addison was like, all right, time to show up. Like, you come on. Mm-hmm. Pretty much right off the bat, like the first week, he was like, all right, you're involved. Let's go. Like, let's get moving. And from that, you know, it was just the kick in the pants to get going. Like, once I got there and I kind of got the lay of the land of what was happening, I was doing this, I was doing that, I was picking up this, I was picking up that. Like, I just kept moving, and I was working some fun things, some things that were tough. I remember I got ridiculously sick because I was in freezing rain filming God knows what,
mm-hmm.
In the middle of October. And the next week I was like in bed when I wasn't in class, just ridiculously sick. And that's the type of grind though. Like, you work your way up, you prove that you can be trusted. And Owl Sports Update in its nature is like that, you know. If you want to work at it, you're going to get rewarded there. And I'm very happy. Matt Fine's done so much for me. He's gotten me plenty of opportunities outside of Owl Sports Update and within. And I think I've learned a lot about being a reporter. And hopefully now I can learn a little bit more about being an anchor.
Very awesome. Ray, 5 years from now, where do you hope your broadcasting career is?
Oh, man, I feel like, did someone forward you this question? Because I feel like I've been asking myself this question all the time. This is like a career crisis hotline type of question for me right now. I don't know. I honestly don't. I have picked up a little bit of play-by-play work in the last week. That's hopefully going to continue if there's sports in the fall. So that's great. My original love was play-by-play. I would love to continue doing that and see where that takes me. I am the sports director at the radio station, so I obviously love radio. Mm-hmm. Radio is a lot of fun for me. Podcast, pretty much an arm off of that branch, or a branch off that tree, whatever it is. And just the audio delivery of sports talk, I would love to be in that. And TV, obviously, I've had my fun with too. So for me at this point, it's like, you got 2 more years of school. Figure out what you love, figure out what you don't, mm-hmm. and kind of go from there. I mean, hopefully, I guess in 5 years, that means I'm 3 years out of college. Hopefully I've moved on to a mid-level market and whatever I'm doing. And hopefully I've been back to the area once for a Phillies parade. I don't know. Yeah. Honestly, in 5 years.
Really, though.
It's great because I know where I want to go, but I don't know exactly what in that. Like, I want to be in sports media. Sports media has a lot to offer. And I think I'm just going to continue trying every opening every door I can. And until they kick me out, I'm going to hang in there and get some experience.
Very, very awesome, Ray. Now, I got two more questions for you.
All right.
The first one being, most favorite game you've ever called?
Oh, man. I went through this when I graduated. I remember I had like my top three that I thought were my favorites. I'll have to say junior MBA, I did Northeast Region, the girls basketball semis. Mm. Michael Carter Williams team that won to move on. And I think that was one of my better broadcasts I've ever done. So that was a really cool one for me. I liked that one. So that would be up there. The girls basketball team at Spring Ford winning the PAC title my senior year. That was another great one. Actually, funny story about that. I had a girlfriend at the time, mm-hmm. and that game was on Valentine's Day. And I called that game. She was there. And because Valentine's Day and that game was going to go late, the reservations on a Valentine's Day for late at night, not very much available. So it ended up being Champ's Valentine's Day dinner. As you can tell, big winner in that situation. Great boyfriend moment for me. Going to Champ's for Valentine's Day.
There you go.
Nacho's really great choice for Valentine's Day dinner. This is my relationship advice to all of you. If I'm doing it, probably do the opposite. But yeah, that game is up there. There's so many just I honestly remember a lot of the games that I didn't do. Mm-hmm. that helps. Like Spring Ford, the lacrosse team going for whatever, like the 7, 8 feet, 9 feet, whatever it was my senior year. It was supposed to be torrential downpours, thunderstorms. Like they didn't want to bring the equipment to the game. I went to the game, sunny skies. We could have done a broadcast. That one haunts me. I know I could have called a lacrosse title on that. And one of my best friends from high school is on that team. So that one haunts me. The fact that I didn't get to call boys basketball winning a championship, that one still haunts me. Because I think that PV Spring Ford 2017 PAC title absolutely was one of the better ones I've ever done.
Oh, yeah.
That was so much fun. DeBondo and I had so much fun with that. And you look at me in that video and like the opening, I'm brace faced. It's like the voice is nowhere near where it is right now. Mm-hmm. And yet you could tell just how naturally comfortable DeBondo and I were over a broadcast together.
Right.
That's the one thing I wish. I wish the two of us could be brought back to a broadcast. Even though he's been out of it. He's a writer now. He's a big-time writer.
At Syracuse.
At Cuse, yeah. And does some TV hits, but not mine. Now, so he's more out of the broadcast world, more in the print journalism world. I would love to bring him and I back to do one broadcast. I don't care where it is. I don't care who does it. Mm-hmm. So anyone listening to this that's a broadcast that could put DeBondo and I back together for one night, that would be absolutely incredible. Because I think we did really, really well for that one. I think that's probably my favorite, honestly, because it was a big moment for RCTV. They brought the truck for remote broadcast for the first time. And beyond that, it was also big for the two of us that we did a championship game together. And then Jaws after the game, laughing in DeBondo's face about winning the title against Springfield, but it's like the icing on the cake for everything that night. So that was just a great night in general.
One more question before we flip the script. Top five sports broadcasters of all time, in your opinion?
Oh, man. So are we going to go play by play here? Are we going to do
just
people I enjoy?
Yeah, like in your opinion. Yeah.
No order, the people I've enjoyed the most. Harry Callis, obviously, inspiration, got to be there. I love Van Pelt Sports Center, so he's up there for me. And if we're talking Sports Center, no one did better than Stuart Scott. So
absolutely.
there's a solid big three there of people I thoroughly enjoyed. I love Scott Fransky. Mm-hmm. So I'm, as you can see, very biased to Phillies baseball here. Let's go Kevin Harlan.
Kevin Harlan, that's a great one.
So yeah, there's basketball is ripe with great play-by-play guys. Mm-hmm. I mean, Jim Nantz not getting on my list is a terrible, terrible exclusion there because nobody does it quite as well as Jim Nantz does and has done nearly as long. Joe Buck not getting on my list would probably make a lot of people happy, but I also love Joe Buck.
Yeah, he gets a lot of flack that he doesn't deserve, I don't think.
He hates both teams. That's the best thing you can do.
Yeah, that's the best thing. He's neutral.
Best thing in the world. I do love Joe Buck. I also love Mike Tirico. Mike Tirico, I can't wait till he's doing play-by-play again for football. Not that I want, you know, Al Michaels to retire, but I just love Tirico. I think the Tirico Gruden booth, nobody realized how great it was until it was gone.
Right.
But yeah, there you go. There's like eight top five. Just like my favorite podcast was like six different podcasts.
Yeah.
I'm bad at picking favorites. I really am.
What about Marv Albert? Marv Albert, the voice of NBA basketball.
There's another one.
There's a lot. There's a lot.
Yeah. There's a lot of talent. What's with this? All right, you ready to flip the script?
Absolutely. Let's do it, my friend.
All right, so now on to you. How did you originally get into basketball?
Now, that's a great story because how it happened was I tried out for – oh, how did I get into basketball altogether or
– Basketball altogether, the sport.
Oh, I was signed up for it at 6 years old, and from that point on, I played with, like, the Pee Wee League teams, right, in PBYB, and I just enjoyed doing it. I had a lot of fun running around on the court, and
that's Energizer players. Those are the best. Yeah. Just run around and tire everyone else out.
My main mojo was defense. I would steal the ball a lot because I'm pretty small, quick player, so it was easy for me to steal the ball.
Sounds like we have similar playing styles. I feel like a team with two of us would be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
As you got into basketball playing it, was there any teams, any players that you watched growing up that, like, solidified your love for the game of basketball?
Actually, growing up, my favorite player was Andre Iguodala on the Sixers. He was my all-time favorite player. I had his jersey. And those old Sixers teams with him, Jody Meeks, Drew Holiday, Spencer Hawes, in 2010, I would watch those guys every single night. I loved those guys. They solidified my love for the game.
It's so funny for like the era of us that came up. That's the team that made us fall in love with basketball, not realizing what actually could be in terms of a solid basketball team. But I agree with you on that. And then getting into basketball manager, how did that come about?
In ninth grade, I tried out for our freshman team, and I didn't make the cut. And the head coach of the freshman team, Bruce Burke, who is a great coach in my eyes, great guy, very grateful for him. I think he told the players that he needed a manager, somebody to help out, somebody who's reliable. And I got a call that night from my good buddy, Blaze Blumstrom. And he called me, he said, you know, we needed a manager and everybody thought of me first. So I was interested at first and I was intrigued. So I said, yeah, why not? And so I had class with Mike Poisden. Who was the head coach of the varsity team. And he was my history teacher at the time. And so that next day, Coach Burke, he came into his room right when I came into class. And, you know, he handed me the schedule, told me everything that it entailed. And, you know, the first game was a few days later, and I was there.
I feel like for so many of us that get into the sports media, sports management type of administration type of professional path, there is a great story about getting cut from a sports team.
Right, right.
Like there is a realization moment where we're like, okay, well, I love this sport, but this sport doesn't quite love me as much as I love it kind of deal. Is there any, I guess that's really your good getting cut story. Is there any other good getting, did you try and go after the team again?
Yeah, actually I did. After 10th grade, I practiced for a whole year to see if I wanted to give it another go, because you never know if you don't try again.
Right, exactly.
And I got better, at least. Mm-hmm. But you know, I didn't make the cut again, and I was fine with it, because when I was cut, my Coach Poison said, like, even if you're cut, you can still manage again. It's on you if you want the job or not again.
Right.
And
Go ahead.
No, yeah, and obviously, yeah, I still stayed with it because I loved it that much.
When I realized my basketball career was finished, it was ninth grade. Mm-hmm. Well, not finished, but not going anywhere would be the my career was better suited for rec ball, I should say.
Yeah.
When I realized that was ninth grade, two of my friends and I, we all got cut from the team. We all got picked up by one of my friends' parents, and she took us to go get, I forget, probably ice cream, slushy, you know, whatever you do to cheer up a high schooler who just found out they're not that great at basketball. And the three of us all wanted to know what the coach said to us when we got cut. And each one of us was told that we were the next guy. The conversation with each one of us had told, you know, if we had one or two more spots, you would have been the next guy in. And the three of us looked at each other like, well, he's lying to at least two of us in this car. We're clearly not there. And at that point, I was like, all right, you know, and I like this whole sports broadcasting angle of things. I think that's probably where I should lean. But yeah, I think we all have those good getting cut stories. So you start out with PV basketball.
Right.
As a manager.
Mm-hmm.
What does that first week look like for you?
What do you mean?
Like just getting it, because it's very different, you know. You're not playing. You have to get acclimated to what is a manager. How did they kind of lay out becoming a manager, and what did you really take on as your responsibility at first?
For the freshman year, my responsibilities were I had to keep the scorebook, right?
All right.
And that was really easy. It was really fun too. I enjoyed doing that. I was engaged in the game at all times, and you know, it's just a lot of fun to do. I loved keeping the scorebook. I always loved doing that.
And I know that there's a story in here about Addison bringing you along here. And this is going to become the Addison Huntsgrove show because we've not dropped him like four times. But he took great pride in being the Perkiomen Valley basketball manager in his high school career. Fantastic video of him at 2016 PAC title, but we'll get to that.
Yeah.
How did he help you along, kind of show you the ropes as you continue to move up through the program?
I actually, I was on a jog around my neighborhood, and he was out walking his dog, so I thought I should, and this was before my first season with the varsity team too, so I wanted to ask him, what should I expect? And, you know, he just kind of told me, just be reliable, do whatever you can for the coach. And, you know, at the end, he just told me, just enjoy the ride, my friend. It's a heck of a ride.
And a heck of a ride you got to be a part of. Mm-hmm. I mean, you saw quite a few years there of some solid Perkiomen Valley hoops. What sticks out to you the most from that run?
It had to be the 2016-2017 season. No question. That whole season is just, it was a movie. Like, you know, we had Justin Jaworski, Sean Owens, Hogan Milheim, a sophomore Tyler Strecce. Not to mention that whole team. I love that whole team. We also had great bench characters like Axel Lopez, Savon Downing, Kevin Burnaby, Carson Park, and Dante Graves. But yeah, that whole team, we went on a tear. We had a 15-game winning streak. We just couldn't lose that whole time. And basically throughout that whole season, it was very, very difficult to even get a seat at home games. And I told you, my responsibilities now were taking game film for the team. And I had to find a spot in the crowd to film. And I always did, not to toot my own horn, but it was difficult. It was not easy. But yeah, it's something that you see in Ball is Life videos when like top teams play.
It was. Those teams were always packed gyms for that team. That team was just really, really good. I want to take you back. So you were a freshman for the 15-16 season, right?
Correct. I was with the freshman team at the time.
Okay, so are you at the gym for the 15-16 championship?
I actually was not, but I was not at that game.
Really?
Right.
So you missed the technical foul on the student section.
Yes, I missed that. That got me mad, though. That got me super mad.
Yeah, I think you would be in the majority of Perkiomen Valley people mad about that, looking back at it. The video of Addison during that game is incredible. When he realizes what they're about to call, he's like freaking out, slamming the clipboard. He was mad. I mean, justifiably mad.
Yes.
So going into that 16-17 season, obviously there was a little bit on the mind about how the Pac-12 ended last year. What was it for you kind of joining in with that varsity squad? What did you gather from the way that team entered the next year?
Well, obviously it seems to me like they put last year in the past. It fueled them, the fact that that title should have been ours and we lost it that way. But yeah, they came in more hungry. They came in more disciplined, more experienced, because, you know, Jaws, Sean Owens, and Hogan Milheim, they were all seniors. This was their last chance to get a title. And they wanted it bad.
And kind of being put in an environment where, you know, there is a lot at stake in terms of just what they want and what they built for. Is there any more pressure to do your job well? Just in the way that everyone's kind of pushing towards one goal very, very strongly?
No, I didn't really feel any pressure, but before the season, before our first scrimmage, Jaws came up to me and he just told me to do a great job. Like he wasn't like rude about it at all. He was very encouraging.
I mean, when Jaws tells you to do a good job, though, you're doing a good job.
Yeah.
That's PV royalty right there.
Yeah.
So the PAC title game 2016-17, you're filming, I'm assuming?
I am filming, yes.
Okay, so as the comeback happens and PV ends up winning that one, taking it, how quickly are you packing up the stuff to get on the floor for the celebration?
I never packed up the iPad so fast, right?
I thought you were going to say you didn't pack up the iPad.
No, that's the first thing that goes through my mind when I'm about to go on the court. The second the buzzer rings, I'm yelling at the top of my lungs. By the end of that night, I didn't have a voice. And you just see me. I wish there was a video of it. You see me packing up the iPad. I'm bolting down through the bleachers. And, you know, I meet up with the rest of the team and we get the plaque handed to us. But that whole moment, it was just a blur.
And is it moments like that when you know, start to really think about a career on the managerial side of sports? Is it moments like that that kind of fuel you to say, yeah, that this is exactly what I want to go towards?
Yeah, you know, I have voiced to Coach Poisden multiple times throughout my PV career that I want to get into coaching because I can see how rewarding and fun it could be. And I would just love to bring out the best in people through sport and be that role model for them.
And in those conversations with Coach Poisden, what has he kind of led you on? What has he kind of guided you towards?
Well, he played a big role in me getting the job at Kutztown, he wrote me a great letter of recommendation to Coach Driscoll, the head coach of Kutztown men's basketball, and, you know, he helped me out along the way.
And is there any kind of overarching thing that, like, he kind of imparted upon you about what coaching life is like?
No, it was kind of actually, I kind of figured it out along the way, mm-hmm. how rewarding it can be with all the pregame pep talks he gave us and even talks in the locker room at halftime. One of his favorite phrases to use is, sometimes at the end of sentences, he used the words in life. It's funny. Like, he'll say something like, please, I don't need that in my life. You don't need that in life.
And I guess I don't want to transition away from PV too quickly here. I think you guys, after that 2017 title, the 2018 team has the district upset of Bethacton. Mm-hmm. 2019 team did have success. Fortunately, the end of the season for that team doesn't go as planned. And you look back at the memories across there and the different programs, people you got to see up close, be a part of. How special is that just in your memory, and how much do you think that has given you a foundation to build off of?
It's given me a great foundation to build off of. PV has, my years with PV have treated me very well in that basketball program, and the seniors that graduated with me on that team, Ian Streeper, Bryce Streeper, Tyler Streche, Blaze Blumstrom, Connor McShay, I feel like I'm missing somebody, AJ Hansen, you know, all those guys, I would just run through a brick wall for them any day of the week. I would run through a brick wall for any of the players that I've worked with. I love those guys deeply, very much, and I would have their backs any day of the week.
And then the transition from being in high school basketball to now managing at the collegiate level, what was that like for you, and what was the learning curve there?
It's very different, college and high school basketball. I'm with the team at Kutztown way more than I was at PV. Like, college basketball managing, it's a full-time job, you know. I'm at every single practice. I run the clock. We run by a schedule, right? To keep things orderly, and I run the clock for that schedule. And you know, you're going, it's just it is a slight difference, but I was ready for it. I wanted it, and it's a bigger workload, but I love the team that I'm working with now. They're a bunch of great guys. They welcomed me as part of the family, and you know, they're just a great characters, great people, and they're fun to be around.
And what's that life like for you? Because being a student is obviously tough enough as it is. Having that full time job, being student manager, is very time consuming. What's the balance like there for you?
The balance like that is, it's actually easier than you would think. We do have study halls every single day, every single week after practice. And we get a tutor, which can help us with our homework. And I still manage to get great grades. Like this past semester, I had a 3.1 GPA, which is obviously what you can ask for. And, you know, I can even do my homework on the bus on road games too. So the balance is actually easier than you think it would.
And who do you think so far has really helped you develop and grow as part of that staff?
I got to give a lot to my fellow manager, Brendan Cunningham. He's a senior now, but he was a junior when I first came in as a freshman. And he showed me the ropes the first day on how things work around here, because obviously he knows the program better than I do. And learning from him has just been, it's been a great experience.
And then I want to get to the overarching question, which you so nicely bestowed upon me earlier.
Mm-hmm.
5 years from now, where am I seeing you?
You are seeing me, I'll be 2 years graduated from college, right? And that's still something that I'm still deciding for myself. If I want to work within one of the four major sports franchises in Philly, or if I want to coach, try to get a assistant coaching job somewhere else, maybe at a college or even maybe a pro team. But honestly, I think at the end of the day, my main goal is I would want to end up with the Philadelphia 76ers in some capacity. But you understand sports are a huge passion of ours and we'll do anything.
Absolutely. And I think I want to close this off with, if there's one coach, whether professional, college, high school, that you one day would want to hear your name in the same sentence as, who would it be?
Oh my gosh, that's a great question. There's so many great coaches.
I'm just trying to do this for a living, so I make a living off questions.
You're good. That's a great question. Obviously, the coach that has helped me out the most has been Mike Poisden, obviously. And like you said, with your mentor, wherever I end up in life, there's going to be a huge, huge thank you to him, because he's the one that got me started, got me to where I am now. And but I think the professional coach that I look up to the most, that I would want to most be in the same sentence as, would have to be Greg Popovich, because he coached his whole career with one team, still managed to win 5 championships with everything that he has, and even still has success with whatever he's given. So, and those are the signs of a great coach. You can work with what you have.
Pop's a great choice. Mm-hmm. That's a fantastic choice. Well,
all right, Ray. Thank you for coming on.
I appreciate it. I had a lot of fun. A little college. Oh, wait. I feel like if we're having a Collegeville conversation, I do want to have one quick question about Collegeville.
What's that?
If you get one last meal in Collegeville, you can never eat somewhere in Collegeville again, where are you eating?
Oh, my gosh. That's a great, great question. One last meal in Collegeville. I would have to decide between either Collegeville Italian Bakery or Giuseppe's, if you've heard of Giuseppe's.
Okay, so two fantastic choices to you. Collegeville Italian Bakery probably ends up being my choice.
Mm-hmm. You can't go wrong with it. It's a great, great restaurant.
I mean, there is that, but there's also the fact that, like, honestly, if that question was posed to me, I'd probably end up at Champs for nachos.
Oh, I forgot all about Champs.
Like Collegeville Italian Bakery is probably, like, the logical choice for me, but, like, the irrational love in my heart has me end up at Champs for some nachos.
Ray, your favorite wings at Champs? Are you a wings guy?
I am a wings guy. I think it's the sweet buffalo they have. I forget what it is.
Mm-hmm. I'm a hot and honey kind of guy.
Oh, that's what it is, the hot honey. I'm a hot and honey guy.
So good.
So good. Absolutely incredible.
Oh, that gives me another question. Champs, PJ Willahan's, or Buffalo Wild Wings?
See, I'm so loyal to Champs that I can't. Like I get PJs and B-dubs, both join the area, and they're both good. They're both suitable options.
Right.
But I've just been going to Champs for so long at this point, like, it's a relationship that I'm very much committed to, you know?
I respect that.
At one point, they, like, recognized me when I walked in there because I was just there so often. It was just my place to be. Now I don't think they would.
All right, Ray. Thank you for coming on to my show.
Thank you very much. Always a pleasure.
Everybody, be sure to check out Done Deal. That's D-U-N-N-E Deal on Apple Podcasts. Very great show. Highly recommend it. Ray does a great job on it.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
All right. Thank you for coming on, Ray. Be sure to catch the next episode of Collegeville Conversation next Sunday. Thank you very much for listening. As always, I'm your host, Jason Phelan.